Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Stagey Place podcast. If this is your first time here, then let me tell you what this podcast has in store for you. I'm Elliot, and here on the podcast I get to chat to some of the most up and coming creatives in our theatre industry. From writers to directors, producers to designers, and today I'm really excited because I'm sharing with you my chat with writer and performer Rosie Day, whose upcoming production of Instructions for a Teenage Armageddon plays at the Southwark Playhouse after a preview run at the Old Red Lion in February 2020. I really hope that you enjoyed this interview with Rosie. It was really fascinating getting to talk about how much the show means to her and, as a writer, what she hopes audiences will take away from the production. So without any further delay, here is episode 37 of The Stagey Place with myself and Rosie Day. Hello Rosie Day, welcome to The Stagey Place. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. We were just talking in before we started recording about how nice it's been today and throughout this week. You've actually been stuck inside though, I believe, because you've been doing rehearsals for your upcoming production of Instructions for a Teenage Armageddon. How has this week been for rehearsals?
It's been lovely, apart from being trapped inside when it's lovely weather outside, finally. Yep. We've been in the New Diorama Theatre, who have very kindly given us rehearsal space for free, which is so kind. Having a lovely time sort of trying to figure the play out and kind of, yeah, get it on its feet and bring it to life again.
Yeah, that's really funny because actually on Wednesday I was in Theatre Delhi doing rehearsals for a play, and then yesterday I was also in New Diorama in like Studio 4.6 for another play.
We were in 6.2. We were literally two floors apart from each other.
That's crazy. One of the questions that I will ask you at the end of this podcast is about where your stagey place is. And I think a lot of people probably would choose like a rehearsal space for their shows because they're where like the magic really starts to create and happen. So it's really exciting that you've been rehearsing with New Diorama this week. That's fantastic. Yeah. And we will talk more about the production later on, you know, what the show's about and the inspirations behind the show. But first of all, Rosie, what I really want to know is how you actually got into this industry from a young age. Was there any inspirations that you had, and where was your pathway to going into theatre or the performing arts industry?
It was an accident, and it's been one big long accident ever since, really. I was a very shy little girl, and my sister was the all singing, all dancing, extroverted big sister. And she went to a stage school, and she got put up for a BBC series that Lenny Henry did called Hope and Glory, and they needed a little sister for her. She happened to be doing, I think, readings with like potential sisters, and I was just sat in like the casting office. And the casting director asked my mum whether I'd come in and read. And I said, apparently, I can't remember this, but I said, no, acting stupid. Why would I want to do that? I was like 5 years old and was just like, this is ridiculous. But then I think I cottoned on to the fact that I got to miss school, which was really great. So I kind of, that's why I really loved it. And obviously you're treated so well as a kid on set, and it's so sort of lovely. But I don't think I realised what acting was till much, much later. I don't think you do really. Kids sort of that age get cast just because they're very natural at being kids. And then when I was about 13, I think that was probably when I was like, oh, this is acting, and I'd quite like to do that. I worked with Saran Jones on a TV series, and I watched her and was like, I want to be able to do what you do. That was the moment that I was like, I want to do that.
Yeah, and like you were just saying there, the pros about being a child in TV or on stage is that obviously you get that time off from school. Obviously, you'll probably have a tutor throughout the whole entire filming process. But I was just doing a pantomime over Christmas, and obviously we had groups of kids in the shows as well. And you can't believe that even after a pandemic that we've just had, that kids are still allowed to come out of schools and take that time out of schools, especially in the last couple of weeks of term, to then go off and do a stage production. As a kid, yeah, when you were told that you were going to have, you know, time off school, how did you feel?
I loved it. I wasn't a big school person. I didn't really like it. Didn't really get it. Because I think from when I started school, I started acting at the same time. So I always had the two of them. And I was like, yeah, I know which one I'd rather be at. I'd rather be at the theatre or on set than be at school.
And so then how did you then progress then into becoming a theatre maker and then creating the work that you do now? You know, where, how did that all fall into place?
Again, my whole life is one big long accident. I'm just going with the universe. I'm just like, cool, okay, sure, we'll do that now. I did a huge amount of TV and film for a very long time. And I always loved theatre and I always desperately wanted to do theatre and was told, you know, by lots of people and including an agent at one point, you know, you've not gone to drama school, you can't do theatre. You don't have the techniques that you need to learn. And that was a really big thing for a while that people would say. I think it's got a bit better now. And eventually I kept trying to audition for theatre and I got cast in a play at Trafalgar Studios called Again, directed by Hannah Price, who is just incredible and took a chance on me getting to do theatre. And yeah, and I loved it. And then I worked with her a couple of times now and got really into sort of theatre. And when we were working together, I play a lot of teenagers, not so much anymore, but I did play a huge amount of teenagers. And I was really frustrated at either how they were written, because they were written by people that had never been a teenage girl, or they weren't realistic. And I couldn't find a one person play that was about a teenage girl. There's tons of one woman shows, you know, it was when the Fleabag was happening and exploding everywhere. And I sort of wanted to do something in that space. And Hannah went, go away and write me a play. And I was filming in Spain at the time and I had nothing to do on the weekend. So I jokingly wrote this play thinking no one would ever see it. And here we are. So, so now it exists and now people are going to see it. So yeah.
Yeah. And let's just talk about the process of writing that, because obviously if there are people listening at home going, oh, I want to do this, I want to write this kind of play, what is the trajectory that it's taken since that first, you know, notion that you were going to write something to now actually having it staged? And I know that the play has had previous incarnations in the past at different venues. What is the starting point to now, you know, where are we looking at?
So I'd written a lot of and made quite a lot of short films and wanted to work in the TV space with the idea of writing a play where there's nothing to hide behind, like it is the writing, was like very daunting. And so I wrote it probably 3.5-4 years ago when I was filming, and I wrote it very quickly. The first draft came out literally within about 2 weeks, and then I did notes with Hannah and we went back and forth and we developed it. And then probably, I think within about 6 months, we had producer interest in it and we had a preview run booked for The Old Red Lion, which happened literally just before COVID. And we continued developing it, and Georgie State came on board as the director and she did a lot of dramaturgy with me on it. So it's probably, I think, from when I wrote it to the first performance was about a year. And that was our preview run. And we were going to transfer obviously afterwards, but then COVID happened and that's 2 years ago now. So almost to the day, it is going to be 2 years from when I left, from like when we opened last time to when we opened this time. So I'm 2 years older. But do you know what? The pandemic gave us time to refine it, to have other ideas, to bring in this whole other element we've got going now. So yeah, it was sort of, but I think with any writing is rewriting. Like the best thing to do, it doesn't matter how good or bad it is, just get it down on a page and then keep coming back to it and get as much input and feedback as you can, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, when you're saying about the previews that you had at The Old Red Lion to now almost 2 years later, you're saying that, you know, we're now kind of like remounting this production, or I guess you're mounting it because, you know, you had your
mounting
previews.
It.
You are mounting it. So you've been rehearsing at the moment. And what has it been like bringing that script back, especially into this new normal that we call the theatre world now? You know, what has changed for you in the writing or the physicality after the weeks that you're having now rehearsing it to it being staged at the Southwark Playhouse?
Well, allegedly, I now know it really well, apparently, because I've had it for 2 years, but I don't agree with that. I'm still panicking about that. But I think I have distance from it. I was very, like, I'm 2 years older, so the character feels much more like I'm playing a character rather than somebody that's close to me. Whereas I think before it felt very much like it was sort of a blend of me, but this feels very much like she's a sort of new character. And we now have this whole other element where we have film involved. So there's tons of projection and videos. We have Amanda Abington and Philip Dennis to play my parents, but we have like scenes that I interact with. And we really wanted to, I'm a big film fanatic as well as loving theatre. So I wanted to try and find something that combined the two. And funny enough, we saw it all yesterday in rehearsal and I was like, I hadn't seen something like this on a stage. And like they're kind of two worlds colliding, and that got us, I think, quite excited. And yeah, so it feels, because we didn't have press in last time, so we're like, we just did this pre-run to test it really. And what surprised us was sort of the universal message and how many different people connected with it. You know, we had men in business suits and grandmas that loved it. It wasn't just a play for young people by any stretch of the imagination. And yes, it just sort of feels like this is its time to go out into the world, I guess. It's really scary, actually. It's very scary. I'm having a lot of anxiety dreams.
Oh. Well, this, obviously, the play that we are talking about is Instructions for a Teenage Armageddon, which is running at the Southwark Playhouse from the 9th of February until the 5th of March this year. Do you want to just tell listeners, I know we've been talking a lot about the play and about rehearsals, but actually about the play itself, do you want to talk a little bit about whose journey we follow and what the play entails?
Yes, so it's about a young girl who has recently lost her sister and the cause and effect that that has on her life, and the chain of events that unfold. And it's all set to the backdrop of weekly scout meetings, where Maxine Peake is the voiceover of our amazing scout leader, Susan. And it's about her journey to adolescence and all the kicks and punches that happen with it, and how she sort of fights back and finds herself ultimately. Because it sounds, you know, someone's died and it sounds quite sad and depressing, and it covers quite a lot of topics, but the character is very witty and it's very funny, and it's not a sad play. Yeah. It's something that we're trying to get across to people, because obviously we've all gone through so much over the past 2 years, but like, you're not going to come watch this play and be sad. Hopefully that's not, yeah, you know, that's not the intention. Very much like reconnecting with your youth, and or if you know a young person, connecting with them. And we wanted it to be as realistic as possible to, you know, young women's experiences in life. And yeah, but I think at the heart of it is connection, which is something that we're all craving after, you know, this pandemic that we've lived through. It's about a young girl that just wants to connect with people.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, we must talk about the fact that obviously safety among women and among young teenagers in general has been quite rife recently, and that, you know, there's been quite a lot of news about it, especially over the past 2 years. What do you want for audience members who may relate to these subjects to take away from this show? You know, what are you trying to send out to audience members watching?
We hope that it's very empowering and it gives young women a voice. That was really important, I think, was to sort of hand the microphone back to young women and go, this is what it's really like to be us. And actually, a lot of the time, it's really not very fun.
Yeah.
So I think, but empowerment, hopefully.
Yeah. And so not only is Instructions for a Teenage Armageddon now a stage show, but in October 2021, you released your debut book under the same title, A Nonfiction Guide for Teenage Girls to Survive and Thrive in Adolescence, with you having written and curated letters from over 30 women contributing to the book, including Sarah Pascoe, Carrie Hope Fletcher, Gemma Stiles and Tanya Reynolds, plus many, many more. How did the book come about for you, Rosie? And what reaction have you got from the teenage demographic that you aimed to create the book for?
So it came about because somebody saw the play and introduced me to my literary agent and said, oh, I think you two might be quite a good team. So I was introduced to my literary agent, who then read the play and was like, have you any thoughts about turning this into a book? And I was like, lol, my English teacher would be like shocked to her core.
Yeah.
The idea that I would be making a book. So over the first lockdown, we did a big pitch deck, and then we pitched it to publishers, and we were very lucky that we got a couple of offers, and Hachette, who are incredible, took it. And we've spent lockdown over the past 2 years really creating this guide to how to survive your teenage years. And we sort of cover every topic under the sun that I thought teenage girls needed to know about, you know, from consent to boundaries to mental health to skincare to friendships to fallouts to like literally anything that you probably think of. It's probably in the book. And and with the help of lots of amazing women, released it. Yeah, it came out in October last year, and it's gone down really well. And I've had, the loveliest thing is that I've had lots and lots of lovely messages from teenage girls on Twitter and Instagram, having read it, especially over Christmas. A lot of girls got it in, I think, their stockings for Christmas. Oh, nice. Lots of lovely messages saying how much it's helped them or how much they've enjoyed it. And I said, well, my goal when we started the book was that if we could help one teenage girl, then it had done its job. So yeah, it's been really, really lovely.
And how has that actually made you feel as a person, as a theatre creative, as somebody who did have that vision about, you know, helping one person out, how has that actually made you feel now bringing this stage production as well, where it can reach even more people and even more teenagers and young adolescents? What are you really hoping to, you know, achieve through this next stage?
That's a very good question. I'm quite an anxious person, so it's sort of like you don't want to predict, do you know what I mean, anything.
Yeah.
You just hope it goes really well and people come and see it and they enjoy it and they feel hugged by the end of it. They feel held.
Yeah.
I think, and they sort of feel like life is going to be okay no matter what life throws at you. But yeah, it's one of those things where we really would love a lot of young people to come and watch it as well, you know, as an older audience. Yeah. I remember on our preview run, we had one day where we had like 25 girls on a school trip come.
Wow.
And it was the best show, watching their reactions. Because when you're doing a one person play, you're looking at the audience, there's nowhere to hide, so you can literally see what everybody is doing. And that was a really amazing sort of moment, and they all sort of stayed afterwards and said hello, and it was really cool. It was really, really cool. Yeah. I don't know, watch this space, hopefully it goes down okay.
Yeah. And talking about the play, or talking about the book, if there was one bit of advice that you've learned, or you've wrote for the book or wrote for the play, that you wish you knew as a teenager, which you've started to realise now?
I get asked that question all the time. And I really should have an answer prepared by now, is the honest answer. I learned something recently. It's actually a song, a really beautiful song by Passenger called All the Little Lights. And it's about sort of how we are all born with like lights inside of us, like little lights, and they're full of hope and wonder and joy. And then life sort of comes along, and one by one, these lights go out. And it's about coming to realize that you yourself can turn the lights back on. That it's not other people's validation, it's not other people's actions or behaviors, it's finding it within you to be able to get back up and survive and be okay. And whatever happens, I think, in life, like, there's nothing that isn't fixable, no matter how bad it seems. There's nothing that is so bad that it can't be fixed, and time really is the best healer for everything.
Yeah. And do you think, talking about that song, when you first heard it, did you just get this like overwhelming reaction from it? Or like, what was it about the song on first listen, or, you know, on your multiple listens, that really like hit you hard with the song and the lyrics?
Yeah. Well, actually, it was my therapist that recommended the song to me.
Oh, no.
Therapy. And she was like, she's very smart, she's very good. She was like, there's this song, go and listen to it. And I did. And it was just like, wow. Life comes at you fast. And as you get older, life goes so quickly. I don't know if you find that, but like, my weeks are flying by now.
Yeah.
And we're here to hopefully enjoy it. I think that's the point of life. I'm not entirely sure what the point is if it's not that. You know, we've got to try and have fun and enjoy it while we're still here, and not let extraneous circumstances get us down, really. But it's a really beautiful song, and actually we talk about it in the play as well.
Oh, fantastic. Is the song actually included in the story, or, you know, do we get to hear it as an audience? No,
weirdly, actually, I actually did a Passenger music video. So there was part of me that was like, maybe I should write to him.
Because
I was in one of his music, and be like, can I borrow your song? But you know, his music isn't in the show. Britney is. Yeah. There's some Britney. We've got some Britney dancing. Reason to come along.
Yeah, I think I saw on recently on social media, there was like a time lapse of you. Were you learning a routine,
Georgie,
or something?
The director.
Yeah.
Me and Georgie, the director, trying to learn Britney Spears choreography. Yeah, I've got 2 weeks to perfect it, which is great.
Yeah.
But it is, yeah, so funny. It's Toxic. So yeah, there's a dance to Toxic. There's a lot of really fun music though in the show.
And obviously, you know, we don't want to spoil anymore, or I don't want to know anymore either before coming, because I like to come and watch these shows with, you know, wide eyed and make sure that I'm watching it with a new, fresh vision. So I do want to stop talking about the production there, but it genuinely sounds amazing. And I hope that everything that you are hoping to achieve does get achieved. And fingers crossed that it receives the recognition that it deserves. Rosie, thank you so much for coming on to talk about the production today. There is one more question I have to ask you, and it is the title of this podcast. And that is The Stagey Place. And Rosie, what I want to know is where your stagey place is. So this could be the place where you first found your love for theatre or film. It could be a TV set if that's where you first envisage your career. It could be the place when you got into theatre, place where you first started to do rehearsals for a show. It could be the place where you first saw your favourite piece of theatre or your first piece of theatre. Or it could just be the place that comes to mind whenever you think of the stages place that you know. So Rosie Day, where is your stagey place?
I'm not sure my stagey place exists anymore, but it was in Trafalgar Studios, Trafalgar 2, which was the smaller space, had dressing rooms down in sort of like a basement. So you'd go down and you'd have no phone signal, you'd be cut off from the world. And both the plays that I did there had the most wonderful cast, that we just had the best time and would all come in early just to sit around in the dressing rooms and have fun and have a great time. And those dressing rooms hold such like a special place in my heart, because I was always so happy going into that theatre. I think they've got rid of Trafalgar 2 now, and I don't think those dressing rooms, I don't know if they exist anymore, but that they hold such special memories for me. So that's probably my stage place.
And it's so lovely to hear about a dressing room that has made those memories happen, because I guess they're really the spaces where you really get to know who you're working with throughout a production. Because even though you're on stage to do a job and you've got your lines and you've got your characters, but actually it's underneath or, you know, to the sides or in the backstage areas where you really get to know everyone that you're working with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Rosie, thank you so much for coming on to the stage place. That is the end of the podcast today. It's been so lovely to have you on and to chat about Instructions for a Teenage Armageddon. It runs from the 9th of February until the 5th of March at the Southwark Playhouse. Thank you once again, Rosie, for coming on. It's been an absolute joy to have you.
Thank you so much.
And there we go. That was my chat with Rosie Day, writer and performer of Instructions for a Teenage Armageddon, playing at the Southwark Playhouse. I'd love to thank Rosie so much for coming on to the podcast, and I'm super excited to come and watch the production in the near future. And I hope it's got you, the listeners, itching to grab tickets yourself or rushing down to your local bookstore to purchase a copy of the incredible book, which has evidently inspired so many young people, as Rosie explained. So until next time, thank you so much, the listeners, for tuning into this episode. I hope you are keeping safe and staying stagey. Goodbye.